Goodbye.
This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, and you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Everybody, this is Maria Vasquez Boyd, and you tuned to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Art Speak Radio, and we're with you every Wednesday, noon to 1. So thanks so much for sharing your afternoon with us and or listening to us online at kkfi.org. So, this is going to be a terrific show. So sit back and really take it all in. We've got some wonderful guests here. We have Mole Mayor. Did I pronounce that right? And Stephanie Nowotarski, and William Plummer, and Jason Pollan. They're all here. They're going to talk about this wonderful project of research and science, Body of Inquiry, the art, biology, and being of flatworms. And we're going to talk about, the research, the art, and the science that's all merged for this project. So welcome, everybody.
Hi.
So happy to have you here. And I loved your planarian dance. That's really wonderful. So I want to say the description of the project is this, and I'll read this. Four intergenerational and interdisciplinary artists have plunged into the muck of local Kansas City waterways and emerged with an even greater understanding for the complexity ground, where at first glance there appears to be little to see. This immersive installation at the UMKC Gallery of Art features both researchers and artists from the Stowers Institute of Medical Research and the Kansas City Art Institute. Celebrating the joy of discovery, visitors are invited to engage with and observe planarian flatworms on micro, macro, and life-size scales. Explore their interpretations and examine your own in this body of work featuring video projection, live planarians, and individual responses from each artist. What can these flatworms teach us about being human? So that's a great description. So, let's start off with this question. First of all, people want to know what are flatworms and planarians. So can you talk about that and, where are they found give us a description, if you would.
So flatworms are exactly what they sound like. They're flat. And the really cool part about them is you can find them just about on every continent. So we found them here in Swope Park, in Brush Creek. If you got a pond or a lake nearby you, you can go take a look under some rocks. They like the dark. So they are about from eyelash size length to about a centimeter. Most of the species that we find here are in that range. So
are they
all around.
Are they anywhere related to earthworms?
Somewhat, yes, in that they're in part of a larger family, but they do are flat, whereas roundworms are round, right? So they do share some similarities, but pretty morphologically, or when you look at them, they're really distinct from each other.
So what is their role in nature, and what do they eat? Just give us their whole life.
Certainly. What's the point of a flatworm? Essentially, in nature, the point of the flatworms is they sit on the bottom of the hierarchy of things, although we definitely need them down there. So they eat detritus, animals that have died and are rotting, and they help turn that into soil, essentially, in the scavenger position that they're in. So they allow all of the great aquatic plant life that you can see in ponds by helping fertilize, essentially.
So would they be a good source of protein? I'm just curious.
You know, I haven't actually given that much thought. To be fair, when we keep them in lab, so I work in lab with them for science purposes, they expel some mucus. Something about them doesn't say, eat me, you know, and you don't want to eat science experiments.
That's a big no.
Look at snails, though. I mean, they're not very attractive either, but, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
No, I wouldn't imagine I'd want to eat them. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So you can find them anywhere where there's some sort of wetland and bog and
just
that sort
about.
Of thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Are there any features that are unique to flatworms or planarians? And first of all, and I should ask too, is it flatworms or planarians or both? Because
we can flatworms and planarians interchangeably for the sake. Planarians are a type of flatworm. Put it that way.
Okay.
So we work with a specific species, Schmedetea mediterranea, which one can see in the exhibit, which was originally from Barcelona in Spain, taken from a fountain there. But to get back at your question, is there any features about them? Well, for science purposes, they do something that we can't do very well at all. And so if you take a flatworm, and it's about the size of an eyelash, you can cut it into 5, 6, 7, 8 pieces. Almost doesn't matter where you take that piece from. In 14 days, that piece grows a whole new animal out of it. So it's akin to me cutting off my pinky and it growing a version of me that's about as high as my knee and has a full brain, has functioning eyes. It's just absolutely terrific what they can do in a 2-week time span.
Wow. So really, you know, with the function that they serve, there wouldn't be any problem if they really overpopulated, in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if they can reproduce themselves.
Yeah, this is interesting. I'm used to looking at them in a lab situation, so we haven't really given much thought of, like, ecologically speaking, how many there are and how they regulate their numbers in the wild. You know, predators are going after them all of the time. Fish like to eat worms.
Okay.
So I would imagine that there's some sort of regulation happening there.
Okay, good, good. So tell us about the study that, if you could, that Stowers uses the planarians for.
We specifically want to look at their regeneration. I am a postdoc in the lab of Alejandro Sanchez Alvarado, and everyone in his lab is really using planarians as a tool to be able to see how does regeneration work and how do these animals do this. Because, like I said, we're really bad at it. We can't at all. In fact, you poke a planarian, you can't even tell days later they don't scar. You don't see anything. So anybody who's had surgery knows, you have a scar for a lifetime. And so different people are working on different parts of this question. And my particular part focuses on using microscopy to understand where the cells that are responsible for this to happen, where they sit and what they do. And so I use a lot of microscopy and a lot of visual techniques to kind of probe the underlying biology behind how these animals regenerate.
So with this study, is there a connection to that we can learn something from them as humans in our research for medical or scientific?
Maria, I think what you're really speaking to here is basic biology research and how important it is. Mm-hmm. So we're studying what people call research organisms or model organisms, and we're trying to really understand how things work in other animals to begin to see, you know, how do things work when things are going well and how do different species have different tactics to do this? Whereas I think we often think of biomedical research as trying to figure out and looking at something that's going wrong and then trying to fix it. Mm-hmm. But I think I like to use the analogy of a car. If you have a broken down car and you don't understand how the carburetor works, it's going to be really hard to fix it. But if you understand how a carburetor works normally, then you can get it up and running. So.
You yourself, Stephanie, how long have you been at Stowers?
I've been at Stowers. I'm going on 5 years now as a postdoc.
Now, and has this always been your study, the research with the planarians?
No, that's a really good question. Okay. I did my PhD work in the lab of Mark Pfeiffer looking at how cells move in fruit fly embryos as they develop. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested in how cells fit inside animals and what they do in that animal.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated. I mean, I can imagine. What a great study.
Yeah.
So now this question is really interesting because I wanted to find out how the heck did the science and the art merge together? How did that how did you all come together?
Well, perhaps I can speak to that. I sort of was the initiator,
of
I guess,
course,
of the
catalyst.
I was fascinated. Mm-hmm. But how I became fascinated was that I'm a Tai Chi practitioner, and in the class that I take, there is a scientist working at Stowers, and I asked her what she did, and she told me, and I asked if I could have a tour of Stowers. I really didn't know what the mandate was there and what the whole facility did. And that's how I got to meet Steph, look through her microscope, saw flatworms, and began to ask lots of questions.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And after the questions, I got back to Kimberly Bland, who was the Tai Chi friend, and said, could we do an art science project together? And as in your studio, the light went on.
Uh-huh.
And so the rest of what has evolved here is a response to a very positive response to my question, can we do something with this? That was nearly 2 years ago, actually.
Wow.
And we've all met now nearly every Monday since then. Mm-hmm. To see how the four of us might bring something meaningful and communicative together that's opening tomorrow. So
I think the really great part is that when Jason met me, Jason brought William along and immediately was like, I got somebody else who's really interested in this. And during that time, I was also working with a recent graduate from KCAI working on how to visualize microscopy data, MOL. And there's a really kind of funny story about that I'm like pass it over to them to talk about.
Yeah, so Jason reached out to me.
Go ahead and move up to the microphone a little bit. Yeah, there you are.
So Jason reached out to me after he had his first conversation at Stowers, and he said, there's an art science collaboration that I want to start. Like, will you join me? And I said, yes, but only if MOL comes along with us because this is perfect for them.
Yeah, and right when William asked me about that was right after I had set up an internship with Steph, because at KCAI I had been interested in science visualization, and I reached out to Steph. I met them on a tour, and they needed somebody to 3D print cells, and that's what I had been doing for the past 2 years, so it was perfect.
Now as an employee.
Yes, and after graduating this past May, I started working full-time at Stowers in Sanchez Alvarado Lab.
Fascinating. I think that's great. And it all really started just looking through the microscope, right? I think you have to have... I imagine that you have to be open to receive sort of the opportunities to work in this... You know, with science and art, and really, I think you have to have an open mind to begin to explore the possibilities. What if, and you know, that sort of thing. Don't you think?
Yeah. My first what if question was when I saw them, the planarians. Mm-hmm. I noticed what color they were, and saw that they in the lab they eat liver, so they are basically translucent, pretty much. Wouldn't you say, Steph?
Yeah, they have some cells that have some pigmentation in them, so they're a little on the brownish. Mm-hmm. Dust color,
right?
Side
and then
of
when
things.
They eat the liver, they're more they turn that sort of livery color because their digestive system is visible from through the microscope. So then I asked, what if we fed them food color? Would they change color? And no one had ever asked that question, and that led to the colors that you'll see in the show of all these now beautiful turquoise, amber, and scarlet planarians.
Wow, wow. I love it. So if you just tuned in to Art Speak Radio, I am talking to the team of Body of Inquiry, the Art, Biology, and Being of Flatworms. They're four intergenerational and interdisciplinary artists who have plunged into the muck of a local Kansas City waterways and emerged with an even greater understanding for the complexity found where, at first glance, there appears to be little to see. So this is just a wonderful research, a collaboration of arts and the science. Mm-hmm. And so once you determine, you know, that this is some work that you want to do, what's the next thing that you do after you've gathered up your team? What is the first step?
Well, we had been meeting for a little while before we finally decided on what should come of these meetings. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about doing a group show.
Mm-hmm. But did everyone have somewhat of a role in terms of, you know, you're going to do this and you're going to do that and, you know, William. Define sort of that.
I think that we all approached this with a really open mind, uh-huh. because it started with a conversation that one person was excited about, and then two, and then three. So more and more people heard about this, and we got together, and we are all really ready to make something happen. And so when we first started meeting, we were also feeling the waters, so to say, and trying to get a sense of what it was like to be in conversation with one another, because, again, we have the intergenerational aspect, mm-hmm. of this collaboration. We range from being like pretty young emerging artists to people who have been in the field for years and years and years. And so we have a lot of differences, but we also have a lot of points where we could connect over a shared sense of wonder. So we started meeting at the Katz Drugstore studio space, mm-hmm. right down the street, where I had a studio space, and we would have pretty loose conversations. Some of our first meetings, we brought in an old school overhead projector, like you'd see in a classroom, yeah. and we would just put things on
those.
The projector. Yeah, it was hard to dig one up.
Yeah.
We would just like drop water on the projector, and we played around with different things on it, and we learned about the flatworms, and that's when Steph and Maul were both really introducing Jason and I to what these worms were like, and from there, we started honing in on different conversations that were really fascinating, from being able to work with the flatworms in a very visual way by coloring them and filming them, to each of us diving into our own exploration about what specifically these flatworms were really intriguing.
Mm, wow. You know, I just find this really fascinating. So I do want to mention to our listeners that this show opens January 30th, which is tomorrow. Yes, and that's from 5 to 8. And it's on view till Saturday, March 7th. And it will feature the artist Maul Mir. And Stephanie Nowotarski, William Plummer, and Jason Pollan. And that is going to be at the UMKC Gallery of Art in the Fine Arts Building. 203 is the room, at 5015 Holmes Street, Kansas City, Missouri, on the UMKC campus. Is there
5 to 8 p.m.
Oh, did I mention that?
That's the
yeah.
reception.
Okay. Yes, and that's tomorrow. Is there? I know that they're doing some construction right there on Rock Hill. Is there anything that are?
I don't think it's a problem at
okay.
all. No.
Okay. Okay.
So the parking, there's free parking on the 5th and 6th level of the Cherry Street parking garage on UMKC campus. So that's where they recommend that visitors can park. You can find more information on the UMKC Gallery website.
Terrific. You know, we're going to take a real quick break, and in the meantime, folks can look at the website if they choose to, and that website is
www.bodyofinquiry.com.
Terrific. We're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio after this.
This is Bree with a Greenway Home Cleaning, supporters of KKFI and offering deep cleaning services to Kansas City homeowners for over a decade. Our woman-owned, fully insured cleaning team makes life a little easier by cleaning your home top to bottom. This includes floors cleaned by hand, blinds, and dusting baseboards with each visit. Learn more about our deep cleaning service at www.agreenwayhome.com. That's agreenwayhome.com, Kansas City's deep cleaning experts.
Ebony's Bones is a kitchen table conversation that explores the souls of Black folk as we decolonize and question everything that we've been told to believe. Tune in this Thursday, January 30th at 7 p.m. and have a seat at the table.
Our underwriters are the folks that have contacted KKFI, and they would just want to for us to show and talk about their services. So thank you for our underwriters this hour, Greenway Home and Ebony's Bones, who you just heard. So she was our volunteer coordinator, and thank you, Ebony, for that. I want to tell you that you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, and I have a wonderful group of talented artists, scientists, researchers, body of inquiry, the art, biology, and being of flatworms. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Bet. You know, if we could go down the row and just tell our listeners what you do and the sort of discipline or research, what your role is, and they'll have a better idea of who you are, Jason.
Jason Pollan, professor emeritus from the Kansas City Art Institute. I was the chair of FIBER there for some years, and I'm a full-time working artist, and this will be my latest endeavor. Actually, the first time working as a collaborative artist, and found it exhilarating, incredibly informative, and humbling, because I think the three other people here they have very strong left and right brains. I basically don't have much of a left one, so I'm in awe of what they are able to bring together to this project.
Thanks, Jason. That's very kind. I'm Steph Nowotarski. I'm a postdoctoral researcher at the Stowers Institute for Medical Research, and I am in the lab of Alejandro Sanchez Alvarado, where we work on flatworms. And that's what I do as a scientist, but I'm also an artist. So I spent several years painting, drawing, etc. So I agree with Jason. This is actually also I collaborate a lot in science. I have not done a lot of collaboration in art, and that to me has been one of the most valuable parts of this, is getting to know you guys.
You know, and I was going to ask you that, and we'll, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut in, but I you know, we'll go back to that, because as an researcher mm-hmm. and scientist and all, and now an artist, I mean, this has got to be like really something out of the ordinary for you.
Well,
in a sense.
So I guess the question is it out of the ordinary for me? For me, no, I like to communicate visually. Okay. So I'm a microscopist by training. And so the visual aspect of science is what drew me in the first place. It is different in that it's one of the first times that I really get to marry my practice of art and science in a public and collaborative way. And I've been incredibly grateful to be able to do that. It's been I've been talking about it lately, and I think I spent a lot of time feeling like a flatworm that was cut in half, and two parts of me were doing two different things. And then I think this is the kind of situation where each one has kind of grown into a full animal, and they're kind of interacting, and it feels really good.
I like that.
That was a great analogy. I'm William Plummer. I am Art Institute grad. I graduated from the FIBER department in 2018. I am an interdisciplinary artist. I also consider myself a researcher. I've always been really, really interested in biology, and this has been the first time really I've been able to have such an in-depth dive into the world of science, speaking with scientists, seeing what it's like being inside the world of science at Stowers, which was a place that wasn't on my radar until this exhibition became a part of my life. So it's been really, really great just learning about what's happening under our feet in Kansas City and what's going on around us. So it's been a really great 2 years.
And William, I want to mention, aren't you also a musician?
I am also a musician. I am a cellist by training, so that was a thing that I had a bit of a struggle with when I had to decide between choosing visual art or music. I decided to go into art school, and then I joined the Sound Art Collaboration and realized that visual art and music can be something that you don't have to choose between. You can do both as an artist.
Can I make a comment?
Absolutely.
William actually produced a soundscape, which is an integral part of this exhibition. So along with all the video work and other contributions William has made, that is going to be a very important part of this experience for people.
Mm-hmm. And the soundscape was made with, I'm going to go ahead and take this opportunity to give the people who helped me with the sound a shout out. So Jay Ashley Miller helped do the sound production and the sound mixing, which was so helpful and amazing. 2007 Valkyr did the trumpet and Foley sounds. Brad Heinem did upright bass. Dylan Cramhorn did the bass guitar, and then I was on cello for the sound. So,
and is this something that we'll be able to hear during the exhibition throughout the?
It's part of the 16-minute loop of the film.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So you walk in. There's a projection that fills a corner of the room, and you'll hear a sound with the projection as well. And it's an imagined atmosphere and soundscape for these planaria flatworms.
Mm. Hi, so I'm Malmir. I am a lab assistant at Stowers and Alejandro Sanchez Alvarado's lab. I graduated from the Art Institute last year. My major is in interactive arts, and my specialty had always been educational objects. I have always been very interested in biology, and I fell in love with cells a couple years ago. So I spent a couple years working in the fab lab there and met Steph, started working at Stowers.
So as an artist, is it rare to see an artist go into the Stowers Institute when you've studied art and all that? How does one do that?
So
just get to know stuff.
That's one way.
Yeah, no. I don't actually know of there is an illustrator as part of the staff for people who are writing papers, who need illustrations, diagrams. But I don't actually know about another artist working as a researcher there.
I think one of the things that happens, and maybe this is part of our educational system, where we adopt these roles really early on. I'm an artist, I'm a scientist. I know many scientists who are also artists, but and bring those sensibilities to their science, but it's maybe not necessarily a very concrete connection. Stowers does employ people whose job it is to do visual communications. We have several people on staff to do that, to make sure that people's visuals to their science look good and work appropriately well. So as far as getting artists in, Mal came in the door because somebody who works at Stowers, Karen Staling, teaches a class at KCAI and did a tour.
Oh, wow.
And then so the arts class came through, and Mal asked a really, really good question about how the detectors in an electron microscope work. And I went, I think I want to talk to you more later.
So, that's terrific. I love that. I love that. You know, we're going to take another break with ArtSpeak Radio, and then we're going to be right back with more. So hang in there.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two, Two Takes at a Movie currently playing in the Kansas City area. And today the topic is the winner of this year's Golden Globe for Best Drama, and it's called 1917.
It's all about World War I, and it just is magnificent. The real story in this is not only the horror of war, but also the bond between these two soldiers who have an impossible mission.
That's right. Two young British soldiers, played by George Mackay and Dean Charles Chapman, are sent on a desperate mission with a little hope of success. They have to cross the dangerous terrain of no man's land to warn a British regiment not to attack German forces because the enemy has set them up for a trap. And this is a way for Oscar-winning director Sam Mendes to tell a story that his grandfather told him about the war. And what's remarkable about it is that it's told in a single shot, or at least appears to be in a single shot. So it may be the most immersive World War I movie ever made.
It is so emotional, and it's not sappy, but it's really quite moving. What happens between these two soldiers and the experiences they have getting from one part of the terrain across these ditches and bombs and fire and all these horrible experiences, I won't tell you the end.
Yeah. The single shot approach is a gimmick, but it's a gimmick that works. It's all about how that approach makes you feel. Feel a part of the action.
Yes.
And Sam Mendes and cinematographer Roger Deakins really have delivered what I think is the best film that was released in 2019.
I agree with you. I do. It's just very engaging and historic.
I'm Russ Simmons.
And I'm Susan Sanders.
And this is Take Two.
This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd, and you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. In the studio today, we have a wonderful group of artist researchers, Maul Mayer, Stephanie Navitarski, William Plummer, and Jason Pollan. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. You know, again, the exhibition of work is called Body of Inquiry, The Art, Biology, and Being of Flatworms, and that opens tomorrow, January 30th, 5 to 8 p.m. at the UMKC Gallery of Art at 5015 Holmes Street. So we're very excited to be there and to see what work you've come up with, the collaborational. You know, one of the questions that I wanted to ask is how does the Stowers or the science community, how do they look at this? I mean, it's got to be pretty exciting, I think, on so many different levels. I would think that they would be very proud of the body of work that everyone's come up with.
So far, they've been really, really supportive and help supporting the show. But as for how everyone views it, I think we're going to find out tomorrow night when a lot of people stop by. It's right across the street, so I've been getting everyone like jazzed to go.
Yeah.
So hopefully, we'll see.
Well, because I think not only will you just have artists and art supporters and all that, you'll have a whole different discipline of other people that may not necessarily have gone through the gallery,
definitely.
Right?
Also, I think for children, this would be such an extraordinary experience. It would be like going down Alice's rabbit hole, you know.
Yeah.
It's
it
is definitely for all ages. I think everybody would benefit from this exploration.
Jason, to that, you know, it's because that the planarians, the flatworms, are found, I mean, easily accessible. So it's not like you have to go to, you know, the working hospital and get a cadaver and drag it home. Right. You've got this planarian.
Oh, goodness, no.
You've got this planarian, you know, in your backyard, in the water. So it's something that could, I won't say can be recreated, but can be studied in your home, right?
With the help of a microscope, yes.
Yeah.
Even without a microscope, you can see these with your eye, which there will be some at the exhibition, real live ones.
Oh, great.
They're projecting some as large as like 10 feet long, but in reality they're pretty small, and you can still see them with your bare eye. We went and looked for them in Swope Park, and we did it without a microscope. So magnifying glasses can help, though.
You know, and Jason, you started off the with a very good question about, you know, children understanding and looking at this. How do you see it? Do you see this research, this collaboration, this project in maybe an educational program or classrooms down the road or homeschools and that sort of thing? Do you think there's an interest there that people would find something valuable in this?
Well, I know that there are a lot of people that are going to come from the Kansas City school communities visit the show, and so we'll find out. I think an Operation Breakthrough is bringing a group of people, and so I think we'll find out from the children themselves how meaningful this is for them. You know, and that feedback will be very important.
You know, and I could just really see this becoming a much bigger, you know, bigger project with them when they look at this, because then you can also look at nature and recycling and, you know, other sorts of disciplines that hit upon this, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you take any organism that is sort of we overlook most of the time and you investigate it, that investigation alone will lead to questions and some answers and some more questions, right?
Yeah. It's always good to be curious.
Yeah, yes, I think one of the things that we talked about when we're meeting in Jason's living room every week is about how observation and interpretation are two things that happen in both art and science, mm-hmm. and that there's this commonality that happens there. So I think any time that you observe is a chance to learn.
William? And something that we've really reveled in throughout this whole collaboration is we've allowed ourselves to just play and explore. And one of the overarching words that we've used time and time again has been playful. Mm-hmm. Like, this is an incredibly playful exhibition. And in the playfulness, we also try to find points of relatability. And I know that this is true in the video, too, where there's a couple of places where we have some visual jokes or auditory jokes where it's a worm swimming, and then you hear, like, this clip of a person eating soup. So it's starting to make the worm a little more relatable, and it's a little bit funny, too.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to bring up something else that Maul and William worked on. At some point, one of my questions or thoughts was, why don't we see... Normally, these planarians are swimming around in a petri dish, mm-hmm. and I thought, well, what if we created some sort of a maze or a labyrinth or... so that we see how they might behave in terms of competing or moving towards a goal, mm-hmm. food usually or mm-hmm. always. And so Maul and William created these plexiglass labyrinths, which will then be projected in this show onto the floor. But that was another way this playfulness led to those results.
I like that.
Yeah. Something cool is that throughout this whole show, we've used so many skills. We've learned a lot of new things. A lot of different skills went into this. And I sat down with Steph one day at work, and we figured out how to write a script to get these videos of worms to map out the trails mm-hmm. of where they've been. And so we use that in those videos. The actual labyrinth is sort of dark and you can't fully see it, but it becomes made visible by the trails that the worm leaves behind.
Oh, that's fascinating. I love that. Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you, each of you, what were some of your highlights and what was some of your, a little bit of challenges, you know, during this project?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the joy, of course, for me is to, and because I'm limited on the science side of this, to re-enter the making process as an artist with the focus on the inspiration that I got from this group mm-hmm. and from the planarians themselves. And so each of us has done 4 foot by 4 foot square pieces that embody this inspiration from the experience. And so I think most of my time was spent reflecting on that and also reflecting on what else I might do in the future mm-hmm. that relates to further science art projects. And challenges would be how to make that come about. But I think if you ask very often in this city, you often get very positive mm-hmm. responses. Mm-hmm. I think Stowers is just astonishing in the way it immediately embraced the idea of doing this, at least to my knowledge. Yeah. I wasn't there for the challenging part of it.
You weren't there behind the closed doors in the conference room. That, Jason, I don't know about that.
Steph would know more about
that. I love it.
Oh, so it was the most joyful part, and what was maybe the most trying part, maybe? Most joyful part for me. I spend a lot of time working with scientists and working with flatworms. Scientists have a very specific vocabulary when we talk amongst ourselves, and I think sometimes that can get lost, and talking to people outside of your scope doesn't happen as much. And so I've really appreciated the ability to communicate science to other people and see their wonder at things that I have started to take for granted because I get to see it every day, and it reminds me how grateful I am to be a scientist and to be able to see all of these brand new things and to be able to see somebody else experience it for the first time has been absolutely joyful. And I think the trying part has been I have not worked collaboratively as an artist with anyone, and I thought that it was going to be trying, but it hasn't quite been yet. Yeah. So it goes up tomorrow. Check in with me tomorrow, but I think we're good.
Oh, my goodness. The learning has been so incredible because we all have so much to learn from each other. And I think that this holds its place as simultaneously one of the most joyful things, but also a trying thing, was learning not to take anything for granted. Mm-hmm. Learning not to take things that people knew about or didn't know about for granted. And then learning how to put those things aside to have really good open communication with everybody in the group. Mm-hmm. Because we really did have to find a way where we could all meet each other in the same place. Mm-hmm. And I think that over time, through our conversations, we've done a really good job of figuring out how to do that as people and as collaborators.
Mm-hmm. The spaces we met in, or we continue to meet mm-hmm. in actually, have all been ego-free zones. It just turned out that way.
That's rare, isn't it?
Yeah, very important.
Yeah, I definitely agree with William on that. I think that's probably been the part of this that I had the most learning to do, figuring out how to work with other people, and for us to all acknowledge each other's skills and abilities and figure out how we can get everyone on the same page and make this whole thing together as a group. I do have to say my favorite part, though, was the trips out into the field. Mm-hmm. I loved getting messy. We put plastic bags on our feet.
We taped them to our feet.
We were wading in the water, pulling out leaves and plastic bags and looking for animals, and I just thought it was so fun. I loved it.
Wow. I like that. You know, we're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio. We have to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Support for KKFI provided by the Carlson Center at Johnson County Community College in partnership with Johnson County Parks and Recreation Department, presenting Mrs. Krishnan's Party, an audience participation experience from New Zealand's touring theater company, India Inc. Mrs. Krishnan is throwing a party, 4 performances at the Johnson County Arts and Heritage Center on Friday, February 14th through the 16th. Details at jccc.edu/Carlson Center.
Very few newspapers have labor reporters anymore, but these days there's a proliferation of podcasts and blogs on the Internet. This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we'll find out about a website called organizing.work. Then, Clarence Brown led UAW Local 31 in their 40-day strike against GM here in Kansas City. We'll talk to him about the strike and the future of labor and the UAW. Tune in Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
This is Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, and I'm talking with the wonderful collaborators, researchers, and artists, Amol Mehr, Stephanie Novotarsky, William Plummer, and Jason Pollan. And we're talking about the body of inquiry, which is the art, biology, and being of flatworms. So thank you so much for being here today. I have a few more questions. And first of all, with the research that each of you have done, then you took whatever part of that and created your art outside of Stowers, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yes.
How was that for you? I mean, did you get enough information? Did you have to go back? Or what? How did that work for you?
I think fairly organically for each of us. You know, over a long period of involvement with the creatures and with one another, I think for as working artists, we all just went back to our studios and let whatever come out. Sometimes more deliberately, and sometimes just through experimentation. And sometimes the challenges, in my case, was one of the 4 pieces that I have up, I didn't like after I saw it up. And there was just about enough time for me to go back and spend another 24 hours making a piece that I think works better and is closer to a more spontaneous and less pedantic way of thinking about the animals. Yeah.
I think Jason said it. I mean, the yeah. conversations that we had leaving and sitting and incubating with it, I mean, one of my pieces is very deliberate, and I've been playing around with that idea for, you know, about a year. And so that was really clear. And then the other piece was I'd had a feeling and from a conversation that we had, and boom, 3 hours later, there it was. So I think it just very organically. Mm-hmm. I don't know. How about you two?
Well, since I've known Steph, apparently I have been talking about wanting to make something big. And since my major is in interactive arts, I made a lot of prototypes. I got further away from just sitting down and drawing and painting. Mm-hmm. And so I felt after graduating that I was really ready to make something big. So that's what I worked on. But I really feel like we gave ourselves a parameter of the scale of the work, and then we sort of let everyone go and do their own thing.
Cool. I like that. And William?
The piece that I did was mostly inspired by a feeling, and I was trying to find different ways of communicating it. And so when you see it in the gallery, it's a large circle, and it kind of lies in this murky in-between of maybe you're looking underwater up to the sky, and you see light, or maybe you're looking down into a pool. And I was really interested in trying to capture those feelings of the conversations where we're trying to find those spaces between things that maybe don't necessarily exist yet, but we're mining them. One of the things I worked most on with this project was videos. So we also had these conversations that flowed between the lab and then the studio, where we go to the lab and be like, okay, what shots do we need? Like, what do we need to film in order to get these effects? And how do we make this happen? So this led to conversations of feeding the worms different colored pigments, food coloring, which then flowed into feeding the worms UV reactive pigment, which was non-toxic. It didn't harm the worm, but it does glow when you hit it with a UV light, black light. And the worms have a response to light. They want to move away from what light. They sense wavelength. So we, from there, figured out how to make the worms move in certain ways by feeding them UV pigment and then beaming them with a flashlight, which causes them to scurry around because they're trying to find a way to escape the light that they're emitting. So there's those new conversations that formed where you're trying to use very scientific methods for a very creative end.
Yeah, and I know that because you're all respectful to life and these creatures that know planarians were harmed.
Everything we used was non-toxic pigments and had gone through thorough testing. The stuff we used, you can buy at Dick Blick, it's non-toxic. So they did just fine. They came out champs. They're sitting in my incubator right now. They're my art collaboration box of planarians.
I love it. Now, is this project archived or somehow documented, or do we have...
Yeah, we developed a website in tandem so that we can hold it there indefinitely. So as the experience unfolds after we open, we'll have images up of it in the space that it's in, but also has responses from us about our pieces and interacting, and has resources about planarians and microscopes, so hitting all the science and all the art. So that website is www.bodyofinquiry.com.
The show could also be, could travel. Could be a movable feast, and I would think that university galleries and other galleries might well respond if they know, if they find out about this. And
I think that's wonderful.
I think for it to stop on March 7th and not have not regenerate would be unfortunate.
I love you for that.
So I'm
I could honestly see this, touring, schools and other, galleries and that sort of thing. Especially, I've done work with the Missouri Arts Council, where there is such a need for art and science and all that in the small cities and towns and that sort of thing. I mean, I really could see it as a traveling unit of art and science. And maybe there's a movement and dance that will go with it later.
Yes.
Planetarians.
I think that the...
Well, there is, though.
The UMKC Conservatory folks are going to come in and hopefully respond to...
Really?
Yes.
Because, you know, when she's talking about the movement...
Yeah, there'll be panel discussions and different departments that will tour the show from the university itself and outside the university. So we'll see... We'll see what we see after the tomorrow. We're so close to it now.
And it just makes sense. Yeah. You know, it really does make sense, especially when you talk about shining the light and the dye and everything and the way they move and scurry and all that. It really lends itself to movement. And also with the
soundscape.
Right? Oh, my gosh.
Very tempting for us when you all can't see us, but during the break we were all moving around doing a planarian dance that we might choreograph
I love it.
Yeah. We actually do have some of our body movements in the show. We have a video piece where we actually talked about what is it like to move like a planarian, and we filmed ourselves. Which, if you say, actually, I want to recant my earlier statement of what was the biggest challenge of me getting into interpretive dance. I never thought I'd find myself in that space. So
I love it. I love it. So I wish you continued success, because this is going to be really just a wonderful exhibition.
Yes.
And again, it's Body of Inquiry. It is the art, biology, and being of flatworms that opens tomorrow, January 30th, from 5 to 8 at the UMKC Gallery of Art at 5015 Holmes Street in Kansas City, Missouri. And the website is umkc.edu/gallery. And then the website for the research
is www.bodyofinquiry.com.
Very good. You know, this has been really exciting to talk about art and science and the collaboration. This has been really a great thing for all of you and for all of us who get to witness this. Do you have any final parting words, anything that we haven't mentioned? You can mention your website, your personal website, as artists and musicians, and yeah.
Well, since you asked, so my website is jasonpollen.com. Pollen, like pollen that I'm allergic to, regrettably. Yeah.
And do you have anything that's coming up past this?
Well, in less than a year from now, I have a retrospective at the Leni Volkus Gallery opening beginning of December. So 50 or so years of work.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm already getting anxious about it a little bit.
Well, and definitely I do want you to come back and talk about that.
Thank you.
Honestly, come back anytime, all of you. So, and
for the listening audience, by the way, Maria was one of my students in fiber at KCAI.
That's right. Yeah. And I loved fiber. I really
did.
Yeah. So, it had great people, Jane Lackey and visiting artists, I don't recall. But thank you, Jason. Yeah.
Thank you.
Steph?
Yeah, Steph, you can find my website is www.stephanienowotarski, and that's NOWOTARSKI.com.
Very good. William?
You can find my work online at poilywog.com. So that's polywog with I's after the O's, spelled POILLYWOIG, poilywog.com. And I just accepted a residency coming up in June. I'll be in Greensboro, North Carolina for 1 month as a Kansas City fellow for the Elsewhere residency. So,
congratulations.
Exciting.
Yeah. And Mal?
My website is malmir.com. It's spelled MOLMIR.com.
Beautiful. Again, that show opens tomorrow at the UMKC Gallery of Art, the Fine Arts Building at 5015 Holmes Street, Kansas City, Missouri. Yeah, that's going to be exciting.
Do not miss it.
Do not miss it. Now, which one of you is going to dress up like a planarian and be out there like one of those?
Definitely Jason.
I could see that. I could see that. Yeah, this is going to be great. So thank you so much. You know, I want to say to my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in today. Next week, we start off February 5th. So we have one of our old colleagues, Hugh Merrill, he will be here, and Jeanette Powell, and Wolf Brack, Luis Garcia, Chico Sierra, and Deanna Munoz. We're going to have a full house next week, so tune in for that. Also, tune in for Jeff Harshberger, Jazz Afternoon, he's from 1 to 3, followed by Groovy Grant, 3 to 6. And, yeah, so you don't really need to go anywhere. Thanks, you know, so much for tuning in. I also want to mention that this show can be listened and downloaded. You can download a podcast at kkfi.org and iTunes. And we have a wonderful collaboration with One Kansas City Radio. So this show will be rebroadcast at 10 o'clock at their program, One Kansas City Radio, 100.1 FM. Now, I understand that their tower strength is not quite as strong as ours, and so listen to them online at www.1kcradio.org. So, yeah, thank you so much for listening. One more thing. I just want to give my heartfelt love to Charles Frouza, who we lost yesterday, and we will forever keep you in our hearts. Carol Jean Barta and myself and a few other people were going to celebrate his life on Friday, which was his usual show, Friday at noon to one. Anything goes, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And we're going to take calls. We want to hear your stories. We want to, you know, you to talk about Charles and the fun things and the audacity that he had. That was Charles. We just love our Charles. So, so tune in for that on this Friday, noon to one. And you'll hear Carol Jean Barta. She'll carry on Anything Goes. I'll be there, and we'll be taking phone calls in the studio. And I'll also be reading some stories from Facebook, because there's some great stories about our beloved Charles. So thank you so much. And say it with me, honey. I'm coming home.
Hi, this is Arnold Young. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.